Okay, this is board time, Wednesday, November 4th at 1:30.
Okay. Here we go. Good afternoon. We have old business here, 1.1, approval of the minutes. I would like to be able to pull October 21 minutes first and ask that they be updated. If you don't mind, I'll say exactly how I ask that they be updated. One is that we have one big paragraph there. No paragraph breaks. It's really hard to read. I would ask for some logical paragraph breaks. And I would say also the discussion that had to do with the at least one of those topics, that is the proposal to pay off debt early instead of a 2% property tax cut. I would say the minutes as they're stated neglected the key point that was made at the 7:15 mark of the audio recording. The point was made that we've already paid off debt early, more than $4 million in debt over this last year. That's on the recording. That was my main reason why that I didn't feel it would be appropriate for us to keep doing that. I figured it was citizens' turn to have relief. So it would be good to update that. And I have a point that related to that I'd like to introduce, but I'll follow up after we address the minutes separately. So for now, if we can just simply have the October 21 minutes pulled and reflect that point and see what else, if there is anything substantive that was omitted that should be included, that would be welcomed. Is that okay?
I would agree to a change as long as it stays verbatim to what's on the tape and not extended to include what we meant or what we were thinking or whatever, but to keep it accurate to the recorded record and not expand beyond that.
I certainly, there's nothing verbatim about this, but I get the point, and that is we don't want to expand or read something into it that was not clearly communicated there. Does that satisfy you okay?
It does, but I see that you've made some requested modifications.
This is my notes to myself that basically says that, and I looked it up because I wanted to make sure my own memory was serving me correctly, because I thought I mentioned that we already been there, done that, did that. $4 million was paid off within this last year that accomplished that. And, yep, sure enough, it's there at the 7:15 mark. So whatever the tape says, let that prevail. I just want to make sure we don't omit my main reason why I didn't feel it was appropriate to just keep doing that.
And we'll have that part of the discussion separate from the correction of the minutes, correct?
We can follow. Yes, that's my intent to follow through with that, because I have more to share regarding that point. So if that's okay to pull them and let the tape just simply inform us of what the main points that were said more accurately without omission, that'd be great. Okay?
So, yes, as long as we're clear on the understanding that it will be only inclusive of the discussion that took place.
Of course. That's what minutes are supposed to be about.
Send it back to staff to listen to the tape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so we're good with that? Okay, all right.
And that's just to bring them back for review, and then we'll all have a chance to listen to them as well. And
absolutely.
Agree.
Okay. All right, so that would be the October 21 minutes, so those are pulled. And the October 28 minutes, I know that we had some discussion at our BOCC hearing yesterday about the M1, M2, M3, and I thought I would refer to those as well. We had a discussion here. We look at the October 28 minutes. I'm good with to approve them, but I'd like to be able to follow up with a conversation regarding them in how it relates to the M1, 2, 3 agenda yesterday. So the action item before us is to consider approval of the October 28 minutes. Is there a motion?
Yeah. I'll make a motion that we accept the minutes for October 28th.
Okay. Second.
Is there any discussion? Okay, hearing none, all in favor of approving the October 28 minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes unanimously. Okay. Okay. Because both of these, I've got some content to consider on both of these items. If you don't mind, I'll move into that as a natural transition. Is that okay?
We're going to item 2.1?
No, it's the minutes, both for October 21 and October 28. I have material related to both of those.
So we're adding this and...
Mm-hmm.
So,
if you want, I can come back to that after we do one through the other items on the list. I'm open.
I just need to know how to modify the agenda so I know what we're talking about.
The first one had to do with for the October 21. The topic there was paying off debt early, and I have a report from our treasurer's office that showed what we actually accomplished there. And the second item for October 28 had to do with what was actually the action and the just conversation as reflected by our minutes regarding the M1, 2, 3 agenda that we considered yesterday at our hearing.
And that item is already on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. So if you want, we can save that. Well, actually, that would be 2.1. We'd jump right into that. And also, that's why staff is here, I take it, for 2.1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Then I will save the first one, the October 21.
Well, we already approved that.
The debt topic. I'll add that to 2.5 if that...
Okay.
Okay. Okay, and then let me just share briefly as introduction for the 2.1, 2016 M1, 2, 3 compensation. The minutes for October 28 indicate that we discussed it, but the only action we took was to move the collective bargaining agreements to Tuesday, November 3. It doesn't indicate that somehow we were doing anything to move the M1, 2, 3 component back to the hearing. We have received good input since then from HR. Did a great job on that. Thank you. So now we're equipped to consider more that policy. So with that, I'll let someone else lead.
We actually... all those were submitted as one group. We separated out the discussion about M1, M2, and M3. And actually, I think I don't think it's well defined in these minutes what we agreed to continue for the public hearing. I know that M1 and M2 may not have been indicated. So I don't want to nitpick the minutes, but there's no question it was the understanding that we were going to agree with the salary step increases, the salary annual increases to the M3. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on the technicality of it. The fact that we agreed to do that.
If you don't mind, I'll pull that agenda up.
I think it's important we go back because I disagree with you.
You did not agree that the M3s should be included?
That's correct. That what we were doing, when we negotiate, we don't negotiate for the M3s at the same time. We negotiate with collective bargaining.
Well, they're not a part of the negotiation.
That's correct.
But in the past, and even when you have been a county commissioner, that it has been the process on M3s to parallel their salary benefit to the negotiated.
We've did that for the last 2 years. Previous to that, it wasn't always the same. And the reason I say that, because nothing is just automatic here, and everything is discussed. We just don't kick it down the way and say that's what it is. One of the things that I look at when I look at a cost of living increase is that it's about a cost of living increase for everybody. Mm-hmm. And you try to be as imperative as possible that you provide that equality as to what there is. So when I went back over the list and looked at how many people M2s and M1s that were getting step increases as along with that, that some of them were in excess of $6,000 increases. Mm-hmm. And when you get down to the M3s, they were as little as $2,000 or $1,300. Mm-hmm. And something else I noticed is that most of the M3s, if I recall, were at, let me find my spot, We're not getting a step increase. The majority of them were already closer to the top of their pay scale. So I have a problem with the top person getting 5 or 6,000 and the one down here getting 1,300.
Mm-hmm. And so can I just bring one relevant point of clarification here? On our October 27 consent agenda, item 4 was the M123 compensation. Item 5 was the collective bargaining agreements. Those were two independent, separate agenda items. So we agreed in our...
What was the action taken?
They came to us as two separate items, and they were to be approved in two separate, number 4 and number 5.
So... I don't want to get into a you-know-what kind of contest here over the M3s. This discussion, I'm going to go back and look at the record for that, because you're trying to find a record that proves I was wrong, we didn't say anything about M3s, and Tom is agreeing with you. So we can just leave that the record will stand on its own.
I think I said it.
What the M3s were.
Yeah.
So... what I would recommend is that we have the discussion about the M1s, M2s, and M3s, so you can be satisfied as we move forward.
First of all, if we could conduct ourselves with courtesy and decorum and goodwill.
Yes, and that would be where we don't try to stick it in each other's face.
Please, I have the floor. We need to be able to establish if there's a misunderstanding as to if it was a two agenda items or one agenda item. We need to be able to understand what the truth of that was. So it is it help us to be able to know where they were two separate items. They were never combined. We talked about them in board time. We agreed in board time to move one of them back. We did. And now we're discussing the other. I just wanted to make sure that we understand what our agenda was and what our logical path forward was. That's all. It's not a contest. It's just understanding the agenda, the flow.
Isn't that what we're doing here?
No.
Okay.
And are you suggesting that at board time, at no time was it discussed that it was logical to advance the M3 in the way that it had been proposed with the 3-year salary increase?
Our minutes indicate that we discussed.
Well, these aren't verbatim.
No, they're not verbatim, but they're basic. The M123 was discussed separately up here in the first part of the meeting, and then we moved on to the other, and the other was the collective bargaining agreements, and on that one we took an action, which was to move that one forward to the hearing.
The verbatim minutes will be the key to.
Mr. Chair, we're going to be hashing over old stuff.
I don't want to
move ahead.
Yeah.
And take care of whether we agree or disagree when it was there. It's before us right now.
Yes.
And I would like to move ahead.
I agree.
So I had the floor, and I was talking about I was having trouble with the parity, the huge difference in a cost of living increase. And the person down making $30,000 is that piece of bread costing the same as someone making a great deal more.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be a little bit more parity in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of just have a rubber stamp and just stamp them all the same, looking at who's getting the majority of the money is that we do try to do it as fair as possible in actually the actual cost of living. But I shore it up with the fact that in reviewing the number of people who don't get step increases, there's a number of those M2s that get a step increase as well as an increase, and you're talking 4 to 6% increase, depending on what we decide to go forward with. One of the things I want to put on the table for consideration was a separation of the percentage. For example, to try to get some type of parity,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to give the M3s, or recommend we give M3s a 2.5,
mm-hmm.
and give everybody over $70,000 a 1.5. And dollar-wise, that brings them closer together, even though that's just still a difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just a...
Okay.
For conversation.
And so I just want to see, so that would be many of the M2s would, that's one possibility. And being that we're discussing this, a variation on that, just for discussing purposes, would be to just simply consider the M1s to be still have a substantial raise, but that would be a 1.4% for the M1s instead of a 2.2, and that would allow about the $24,000 to $25,000 increase that would be the bottom line for M3s to be covered by that. In other words, M3s would go to 2.5%, and M1s would go to 1.4%, and that would be pretty much a wash when it comes to the total cost for the salary. The savings on the M1s would end up being provide for the 2.5% rather than the 2.2% of the M3s.
The M1s would still get a 4% total increase with the step increase and a 1.5. I'm talking 1.5. You said 1.4.
Yeah.
So that was my thinking. It brings right, and I recognize that the people above the 70,000 mark are still going to have more, but it brings it closer in tune, and yet gives a substantial increase to everybody. It's just food for thought. I'm looking for pros and cons.
And what would you propose, Councilman Mielke, for M2s? 2.2?
Up to $70,000. It'd be the same as the M3, but 2.5 up to $70,000. and above 7,000,
okay.
One and a half.
Councilor Madore, you referred to savings from M1s.
Mm-hmm. We
don't know what the financial impact of Councilor Mielke's proposal would be.
Because
many of the M2s would then drop to 1.5.
Yeah. Here's what I was thinking, is that I think we're all on the same page when it comes to ensuring that M3s are properly compensated. And they make the least, of course, of all of the groups. And the idea there is to make sure that a 2.2% for them ends up being really a smaller amount when it comes to the if they were making substantially more like the M2s or the M1s. So I think we all like the idea of making sure that they at least have parity. And what you're suggesting, and I like the idea of them even doing a little better than that. However, if we want to be able to bump them from 2.2 to 2.5, then somehow the financial responsibility for us is to say, well, how are you going to cover that? I think there's a significant disadvantage in cutting the M2s, because we have a number of the M2s that are not represented, and they have some of those are equivalent positions that are represented, and it would disadvantage them for not being represented.
You're recommending three steps.
No, it actually really is, yes, three steps. M2s would remain as proposed, 2.2. Mm-hmm. M3s would go to 2.5, and M1s would go to 1.4.
Could I mention that if you go with the 2.5 for M3s, what you will end up with is people with the same exact job classification getting a 2.5, when somebody else in that same job classification is getting a 2.2, and I don't know how you explain to the person getting a 2.2 how this other person doing the exact same work got a 2.5.
And I see another issue arising in this discussion, Mr. Mielke. If you're indicating that people will get a certain percent raise if they're under a certain total dollar ceiling. The whole goal, I mean, I see that as a disincentive for people to be the best and the brightest, to get the best education, to be the highest performing, to have the most responsibility, until you get to a certain point, and then you get a disincentive for reaching that peak of performance. So I'm just saying the best and the brightest, the hardest working, the most responsible, the most competent, I do think we want to be careful not to offer something that is like, gee, if I achieve that goal, I'm gonna lose a half a percent in
well,
my
this
race
year.
Or whatever.
This year.
Well, how whenever it is. Mm-hmm. So to seek the best and the brightest always and the hardest working.
Yeah. What I propose doesn't bring into equalization the there's still people making $3,000, and the other people at the bottom might get up to $2,000. So I know the people down at the bottom making $30-$40 an hour, it's hard for them to understand why they're getting less than $1,500 and somebody else is getting $5,000.
Can I ask Chris Horn? Chris, if we end up are there any problems? Is there some legal reason why the non-represented M3s that they could go to 2.5?
It's difficult for me to try and understand how to answer your question. There, as at-will employees, mm-hmm. there is not a specific right to a particular salary increase. The issue, I'm trying to think constitutionally how, if, or under what circumstance this question comes up. I don't think so.
You don't think there's a problem?
No, I don't think there's a problem. If you choose to not raise the salary, I mean, the board in for a couple of years did not raise salaries at all for county employees. The only question is if the effect of your treatment of one group has an effect that appears discriminatory, even if its goal is appropriate, if in effect or in practice it has an effect of that, it can be a problem. But I don't see a legal issue in this particular case other than the fact that it's just going to be a question of demand. I mean, what happens is the board has already begun to find out. We've talked about this a little while ago. As the economy gets better, typically the county loses employees because we can't compete with the private sector. Mm-hmm. We've already lost some pretty good people. As you know, Pam Mason recently left from Public Works, and we've lost a couple others that mm-hmm. That are moving on to other businesses. That's the only real issue, is the trying to retain people mm-hmm. who you want to keep. But beyond that, I don't see, if the board chooses to treat one group of managerial employees differently from another group, I don't think there's a legal issue per se. It's just a different approach to your policy. Mm-hmm. Historically, you've treated them all the same, but that's not to say you have to.
Okay, so we do have the freedom.
I believe you do. I can't think of a legal impediment as I sit here. I mean, that's not specifically my field, but I can't think of any. I'm looking at Francine. I can't think of an issue that I can think of that this raises for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of the things I always take into consideration, the people down at the bottom probably need the help the most. And so when it comes to a cost of living, I don't think their cost of living is substantial enough to offset the real cost of living. And so when we try to do a balanced budget, it's nice to give everybody more money to meet those ongoing or the new expensive things. But mm-hmm. I think that... the higher people are getting at least $1,000 or more.
Yeah.
I don't know why they could argue that.
Yeah. I look at simply the dollar amounts, and the M3s. There are. I'll leave the outliers out, but they typically they're going to be around $1,000 to $1,200 to $1,500, somewhere in that range.
$900, $700.
And the
there are 400 down here.
And that's how much they would be getting. Yeah, they go down to much less than that. And with the M1s would be getting, looks like, typically twice that or a little bit more when it comes to dollar amounts. So I know that it's a policy call, and it's a discretionary as to how we can see these things. But Chris, if we decide that we're going to do something here to try to reward and compensate those that are making less by giving them a little bit more, if there's a problem, then I assume you'll let us know, and we have the freedom to back that up if there's some legal problem with it. But at this point, I like the spirit of it, because not only would the raise be substantially... it would be improved when it comes to the comparable amount. It doesn't change a whole lot, 1.4 versus 2.2. It's still 64% approximately of what was originally the 2.2. But it helps to even things out in my own eyes. I know it's discretionary, but I feel like it's moves in the direction I like to see it go.
So I'd like to zoom out a little bit.
Sure.
At the time HR brought to us the coalition, other labor organizations, and these salary proposals, we talked about the total cost of the package at that time, and we asked as a board, where does this put us in for salaries and benefits? If we agree to this, what position will we be in financially on this package? And so generally we agreed with that. To me, what I see is the best opportunity here is we agreed to this package as part of the whole negotiation and salary adjustments. And it was clear to me that the M1s, M2s, M3s were piggybacking. So on the M1 and M2, on the coalition contract, and what I'd hope we'd do with the M3s is have that be a 3-year package, because we know the coalition is a 3-year package. On the M1s and M2s, we're not locked in long term. It's for 1 year. So M1 and M2, we're only talking about a salary increase for 2016, correct? And
no.
We can adjust that rate of increase or give no increase in the second and third year.
Correct. That was the recommendation on the staff report, was M3s were for the 3 years,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
16, 17, and 18, and M1s and M2s was just for the 1 year.
Yes.
Okay.
So that gives that the ability to relook at the annual rate of increase for M1s and M2s is going to be open to us moving forward. So we're not locked into a 3-year decision here. We're looking for a 1-year decision for M1s and M2s, correct?
Correct.
With the ability to renegotiate at the end of next year and the year after.
Not to negotiate technically, but to establish a new program.
Negotiate is the wrong word, but for us to
reconsider.
Yep.
Reconsider, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, gives me a better feeling about going with the rate of increase for 2016 on the M1s and M2s that I thought we basically agreed to. So I agree wholeheartedly that it's the job of the board to look at the whole package and the whole cost. And the control of salary and benefits is one of the key responsibilities. And that was in my mind when I accepted what I thought was our proposal for this when we accepted the coalition.
Are you done?
For right now.
Okay. So the M1 and M2, I'm looking at the original agenda item. I guess it was number four at the time.
Four.
Four, yeah. So that does break out the time period being 3 years for the M3s. And the M1 and 2, I didn't realize that was, because it didn't say, I assume you were, wait, that was not a 3-year, that was proposed to be 1 year?
Correct.
Okay, all right. And so we could just simply define the M1 as 1 year and M2 and 3 as 3 year. We have that freedom to specify
I would suggest that if you're going to cap the pay raise if you're going to differentiate for M2s between 2.5 and 1.5, I would not lock that in for 3 years.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
So the M1 and 2 should come to you together, and the M3 should come separately.
No. I get your point. However, I don't mean to say no. I mean to say here's what I'm thinking. I understand that some M2s are represented and some M2s are not, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so if we end up saying, and the M2s already have a 2.2 for 3 years, right?
No.
That are represented.
If they're in a bargaining unit, yes.
Yeah.
That we've settled on.
Yes, and so if we were to say, well, if you're not represented, then we're going to give you less, that's not good. That's what I don't want to do. Because we understand that there's a demand that we're in a competitive world, and those that are not represented are at a disadvantage when it comes to comparable job security. They don't have anybody to go to bat for them to be able to ensure that they have monster job security. So I do not want to penalize any of the M2s, because what we're talking about is non-represented in comparison to represented. Represented already gets that. Non-represented don't have the benefits of being represented and the benefits of the more secure position. So with that, I do not want to cut any of the M2s, because then that penalizes them for not being represented.
So 2.5 for M3s, 2.2 for M2s, and 1.5 for M1s?
Question.
Is it 2.5 for M3, 2.2 for M2, 1.4 for M1?
All M2s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's a proposal. We're brainstorming here.
Okay.
We don't have any M2s in collective bargaining?
We do.
No, not on the list here.
This is a total list?
These are all non-represented. Similar positions. They're not only M's only refer to non-represented.
Okay. So,
Mr. County Manager.
That's okay.
Yes, ma'am.
This room is configured differently than the other room. What I have are the guys lean in and talk to you, and I can't hear what's going on. So, if we could all speak up a little bit, we don't have microphones in here. And so we're talking to this group, and then when the backs are to me, I have a hard time hearing. So thank you. Appreciate it.
So the suggestion is as you said.
That's it, right there.
Instead of putting a dollar amount, do it by classification.
No,
I just have
1.4. The reason I pick 1.4 is because it's a wash when it comes to the dollar amount, pretty much. It's about a $25,000 okay. difference for that so, we're moving from one to the other.
Okay, so all of M2s, instead of using by a dollar divider, mm-hmm. you said all of M2s would be a 2.2,
mm-hmm.
M1s would be 1.4,
mm-hmm.
and M3, 2.5.
Mm-hmm. Did you catch that?
No. Would you say again, M1 is what?
M1 is 1.4. All of M2, 2.2. M3's 2.5.
And M1 and M2, is this for 1 year? Because right now,
that's the
time frame.
No. M2 needs to be 3 year, because that's what the contract was for those that are represented.
Okay. Good.
And the M3s?
The 3 year.
M3 and M2
are
the same.
3 years. M1's 1 year?
And M1 is 1 year.
Okay.
And that would allow next year for them potentially to be bumped up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I do a process check? We're going to go into executive session and talk about collective bargaining for the balance
talking
of this year.
Talking about what?
Collective bargaining. We still have some open agreements that we're going to talk about in
I
executive
see.
Session yet. And I just want to, are we taking this decision then back to a different meeting to make the final decision, or will we be making it here?
And this is a problem. I'd like to have it here.
Sounds like the board's in agreement.
If well, I don't want to send the wrong message. This is not to go back and have a huge budget implication that says, well, we're going to go up and give everybody which is large numbers that are represented, that have more job security, a higher amount. That's not the message. We wouldn't be able to do that. We're talking about $25,000, not a substantially larger sum than that. This is bite-sized enough. It is not practical for us to do something larger. And we're covering that cost by moving from the M1s. M1s are sacrificing something here in order to do that. That would not even be feasible for us to be able to say, well, let's go back and open those three things up and everybody gets 2.5, because the budget constraint would not allow us to do that.
So with M3s as non-represented, getting 2.5 for 3 years, that means that the non-represented end up with a better package than the represented. So whether that's fair or not, or whether that's a policy question or not, we need to be aware of the impact that can have on future bargaining. Because the process was not easy. So I think we need to be aware of other implications that we get with that in the big picture. I'm just throwing that out there for people to think about. This might not be the best place to discuss it, especially if we have other matters to discuss later.
I agree. This is a finite, short list that moves 25,000 from one group to the other. Oh, I'm being doorbelled.
We're glad the duck went away.
Yeah, I got more than one animal there.
Depends on who's calling.
Yeah. So the implication there is that, well, if we do this for non-represented, that we got to do it across the board for everybody else, and that is not even on the table. It's not realistic. I assume that people join a union because of the benefits that they receive from that. If job security, grievance, all the other benefits that come with that. These individuals do not have that.
So who suggested that?
What?
Did you misunderstand? Did you think that was my suggestion?
This is my own, I'm speaking for myself, not for you.
I see. Okay.
Okay. That's how I understand. If I understand, if I misunderstand, please correct me. If I don't have it right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. So that's my my rationale, moving from one to the other. And by the way, M1s, thank you everybody for helping out a little bit here. Some of this comes down to leading by example as well. If we want others to be able to be thrifty, we have to be willing to be able to be thrifty. And
they're not left out.
No.
That 1.4 is a whole bunch more to them than the 2.5 is to somebody else.
Yeah, it's still 64% of it.
And majority of them have steps also mm-hmm. on the M1. So.
Okay. Any more discussion on that one?
What is the total salary savings by changing M1 from the originally proposed 2.2 to 1.4?
It's about $24,000.
And then what is the added increase in cost of going to M3, moving from 2.2 to 2.5? What's the dollar impact on that?
$25,000. Here's the math.
So it's kind of a push.
Yeah, that was the idea.
Okay.
Okay. So, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we accept non-represented.
Well, if we just specify M1, 2, and 3.
M3s for 3 years at 2.5. Mm-hmm. M2s for 3 years for 2.2. Mm-hmm. And M1s for 1 year at 1.4.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for non-represented. Is there a second?
Salary increase.
Second.
Okay. Any more discussion?
Nope.
Okay, hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Mr. Chair, just to clarify,
yes,
that motion that just passed is for staff to prepare the necessary paperwork to bring back to the board in a public hearing.
Actually, a good point.
Bring it back.
Yes, I think we understand that.
Okay.
Is that okay, Mr. Motion Maker?
Yeah.
Done. Well, that's what we're...
Madam Seconder.
Do we have to bring it back to the board, our regular board meeting? Yes.
I don't think we have to do that because we made the motion here in a public setting. Chris, do we have to go back to a hearing agenda, or the actions taken here sufficient?
The board can. This is an open public meeting. The ultimate adoption of your budget, and this is going to be a component of that, but the ultimate adoption of your budget will occur in a public hearing, and I assume it's going to be set for either the first of December or December 7th.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be done by December 7th, the first Monday in December. Mm-hmm. But the approval of this portion of it, as long as it's properly on your agenda as an open public meeting item, okay, you can vote on here and can be incorporated into the ultimate budget.
Okay, that's what I'd like to
what
do.
What was our action that we took at the end of our board meeting?
I don't want to load up the consent agenda.
No,
you don't have
I know,
to.
But this may
was
be a matter of...
Was it to
actually,
continue it,
I recall,
or was it
I recall,
to
there were
bring
two
it
motions.
To a board time? Yes, there were two motions.
Yes, the first one was to move to an executive session, which we have not. And the second was to consider this action. Am I talking about the same motion?
No, you're correct.
Be able to cover this during open meeting at this time.
To cover it, but did we...
Potentially take action is, I think, the way the wording was.
I think it's cleaner if we do it in a regular meeting. We apparently, Mr. Horn, do have legal authority to do it here.
As long, well, what the issue you now you're raising, I mean, I thought the question was just a substantive one, whether this was a proper vote for board time. If the question is whether or not this is properly advertised, let me take a look at your agenda item.
Would have been the week before Tuesday.
Next week we have 1 hour.
I think.
I mean, the easy way to resolve it, of course, would be to set it till Tuesday, and we'll notice it, but I'm looking at the grid right now.
So one of the things I'd like to remind is that next Tuesday, I believe, that we're
so
only allowed 1 hour for a hearing. So next
did
Tuesday, we all need to go to
watch that. The union contract approval?
The following? Oh. I still don't want to.
Chris, you have an answer?
Well, it just shows as new business 2016 M123 compensation. So this is only 2.1 says that you're going to consider the 2016 compensation for M1s, 2s, and 3s, and it's a board item. So to the extent you go beyond that, you should probably move it to Tuesday. To the extent you limit it to that, then you can do it here today.
Okay.
It's my understanding. Well,
I think I might have just misanswered her earlier because we covered something else, and that was the Cowlitz resolution, and that's the one that we took motion to do executive and then
right.
open.
Yeah, that's correct, because this is not material for executive session.
Right,
M1s, 2s,
right,
and 3s.
Right.
What
so I apologize for the error. And instead, what we did is we
moved this to board time.
Moved this to board time, which means
was that the only action we took was move it to board time? for discussion and or action or?
Well, I don't want you to trust my memory because I have my own sense, but by the same token, it's important. My memory was that Councillor Stewart, you had consistently, both on last Tuesday and today, said that the board had agreed to the M3s, that they would be approved, and you were promoting that.
Yes.
My understanding was that that was going to be moved to today for board time, and that there was going to be some other discussion regarding M1s and M2s, but I'm not sure there was even an agreement among the full board about what would happen with regard to those two entities.
I brought it up at that time. We would also take action today.
Okay, I that could be. As I said, don't trust my memory because I
didn't remember what I said. Okay. I don't know if those other guys.
If I can add my own recollection also, it may like be overstating that we all agreed that we were going to do this exact same thing on M3. That it was never my position, and although it may have been implied by another counselor's conversation, I think what we agreed upon is equal to or better than, in my eyes. I mean, I wouldn't say agreed upon. That was my position all along because I've been thinking about this for some time. So at this point, this item, M1, 2, and 3, compensation package is noticed on our board time. It is a public meeting. We did move this action to board time, and I believe is that sufficient notice for us to be able to just simply take the action we just took? We just voted on it.
I understand. The only technical clarification I would give that might give you pause for finalizing this today is the fact that, as I understand it, your vote with regard to M3s was going to be a 3-year action, not a 1-year action.
Well,
and
we have
M2s.
Oh, and M2s. Whereas your budget, whereas your notice item, your notice of hearing limits it to 2016.
Well, we didn't specify we specified the topic that we consider, and I understand we have the freedom to amend and to fine-tune that appropriately. As long as we show that we advertise this as the agenda item, we have the freedom to be able to define those terms in this meeting.
Sure. I think the board has the ability, once something is in this, once it's been properly advertised, if it's within the scope of the general subject area, to make amendments to the agenda. Yes,
very good.
So I recommend that we move forward with what we've done. If we find something in the next day or so, then we'd bring it back to the hearing.
So what I would suggest is that I think it is sloppy to have more than one place where we take action on salary and benefits in this sense. So how does the council do that? Well, they might put it on a Tuesday televised board meeting, or they might do it on a Wednesday in a board time. I think salaries and benefits is our most expensive, other than enormous capital costs for buildings or whatever, but in the long term, the largest single expense item is salaries and benefits. And to have a consistent forum where we approve changes to that, it would seem to be good to do it on the record, on TV, in our usual forum. And I'm not disputing what Chris says, that
we're recording.
This would be legal to do it here. I'm just saying I think it would be a cleaner process to use the same forum as, for example, when we approved the union contract. So it would be cleaner to have a consistent way we do it on our single largest expense. So I'd urge us. It sounds like we're in agreement on this.
We voted.
And just to bring it back and ratify it in a Tuesday meeting. Can it be a consent item?
Well, yes, absolutely.
Well, technically, it's part of your budget agreement, is it not, Chris?
No, this is a separate arrangement.
Separate arrangement.
That drives budget.
I don't like loading up the consent agenda when we're transparent enough and we have it recorded here. And it's in a public hearing. That's why we were here with the public. And I don't like repeating work over and over and over again. We have other things to do besides that.
The only difference between this and the public hearing is the ability of the public to testify and comment on things.
They can still comment Tuesday.
After the action is done.
It's already
Tuesday,
been done.
Well, Tuesday, if it's on a consent item, they can comment. But I would just urge us to do that just to for stated reasons.
I have five more items.
The record, I know, Mark, you've had an appeal and we were at, to somehow change what the vote that we just made.
I'm just seeking clarification, like Francine, on process.
Yeah, but the motion was stated and we voted on that as stated. So in reality, we took
Done.
The action.
Done. Okay.
So was a motion made?
Yeah, we just voted on it. Unanimously.
To adopt it as opposed to
yes.
bring it forward to
yes.
adopted it.
I'll be more careful in the future then.
I appreciate that.
Because I think it should be on television and where people can testify.
Okay, I understand. Research analyst, that's you, Tom.
We've kind of let this slide by, and we're back and forth, and we're looking at job description. And one of the things that's more important is that we have an analyst rather than be shorthanded. And we're going to be shorthanded here in a real short while. That I would like to move forward with replacing Axel with a research analyst, same as Peter Silliman. And I'd like to get that posted immediately.
And I assume that you're speaking of the same job description as we already
as
defined
Peter's,
for Peter?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a motion for that?
Well,
no,
Chris.
Wait a minute.
Chris.
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Nobody has shown me a copy of the job description for this, and nobody has raised the issue before today about what happens with filling that position.
Well, I think more important than that is, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but the board doesn't have purview over classification of individual positions. That is an executive function.
The hiring of employees, once the positions are budgeted, is an executive or administrative function that is controlled by the county manager. So it's a position that is budgeted by the board and filled by either the county manager or, depending on the level of the position, it's filled by one of the directors if it's that level of employee. But yes, it's
Chris,
either executive or administrative. Yes, sir.
In here, I think what we have potentially is we need definition when
sure.
it comes to charter. Because the executive branch does not set policy, the legislative branch does. So the legislative branch, I would assume the policymaker, who is a resource for policymakers, belongs on the legislative side. Why would the executive branch hire a policymaker to serve the executive branch?
The complication of that is the fact that the charter doesn't contemplate a position that act functions as a legislative or as a legislative aide. In some counties, Snohomish County is a good example where individual counselors actually appoint and hire people frequently. Well, I won't go into who those are, but they actually, the charter contemplates and gives them the authority to hire an advisor who acts as a policy analyst, and each counselor has one. The charter just doesn't deal with that issue. And so while I agree with you that to the extent somebody functions as a policy analyst individually for the legislative branch should be able to be retained or hired by that branch. I'm just saying that the charter doesn't distinguish that.
I think there's a really good solution for it, though, a way to accommodate, and that is I'll propose this, and you can tell me whether or not it makes sense, and that is that the charter does not prohibit our executive branch, Mr. County Manager, from accommodating willingly, voluntarily, meeting the needs of the legislative branch. In other words, it doesn't say that he must ignore the kind of qualifications, the kind of makeup that would best serve the policymakers. Instead, I would think it would just be good policy, good practice for the executive branch to say, this person's to be a resource for you. You define how best I can meet that need, and you do so by describing what the job description is, what you want them to do, what kind of qualifications you want them to have, because they're going to be serving, they're going to be a resource for you. And so the county manager would voluntarily, willingly, cooperatively facilitate that. Is that correct?
I mean, I'm not sure that's a legal question.
Well, the question is, does our county manager have that prerogative to do that?
The county manager has certain obligations under the charter that he can't abdicate. But having within that, he certainly has flexibility that he can work with the council on to the extent it doesn't result in his violating or his not performing a duty that's delegated to him specifically. So yes, there's some flexibility for the county manager to work. Certainly there's ability for the council to work with the county manager as long as it doesn't amount to an interference with his function. So there's a push on both of those sides. He has certain responsibilities, as does the council, and you have certain prohibitions, and in between there is certainly working room that can occur. But I can't, I can't answer your question.
We're just talking about freedom and discretion. Yeah. Okay. They may work together in a way that doesn't violate the purpose.
Yeah, Councilor McGraw, the reason I brought that up was it seemed like you were cruising towards a vote on the matter, and I just, the vote I don't think would have any effect.
Well, yeah, let me put it a different way then.
But if we talk together about it.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it before he left. And no action has been taken.
No, I had no conversation about replacing Axel with anybody before he left.
No, we talked about replacing him, is what I'm talking about. So if I put it a different way, I'd like to replace right away an analyst in the pay scale of a research analyst, since I have the authority to control that.
In other
help
words,
you.
Actually, that's not true. The position is budgeted.
Scale.
The position is budgeted at a certain pay scale and classification, not the one you would like it to be, but the one that it actually is. So, you know, when we adopt a budget, if you want to single out that one position and reclassify it and reduce it, you're free to do that. But that the position is it's a senior policy analyst position, not a research analyst position at the moment.
Well, we want to change the position.
Yeah, I think that's really what it comes down to. The question is, how are you going to communicate in a way and work together as a team in order to ensure that a policy resource person is going to be available to be able to help the policymakers be informed?
But their implications.
Well, I'm wondering about this happy chat about working as a team when nobody has ever discussed this with me. So this would be the first team, buddy.
Plus, there are implications.
I'm sorry I brought it up, but I thought it'd be good.
There are implications around this decision that I really do not want to discuss at this table that need to be discussed with you individually or in an executive in some other forum.
I want the lawyers there.
And please don't misunderstand. We introduce topics here at this board time, so that we can discuss them, so that we can consider them. That's what we're doing. Is that okay?
Well, you and Tom are discussing it.
No, we haven't.
And what I'm hearing is leading me to believe that there have been discussions that I haven't been part of. For example, are we going to replace a policy analyst, a senior policy analyst? What would be the qualifications? If this person works for me as well to help me and work on projects, what would I be looking for in that person? So those are the conversations that I'd want to have before we talk about.
Mm-hmm. So we were all aware that the position was vacant, and there's not that much difference between the pay scale of a senior analyst or a research analyst. So what I'm suggesting is that we move fast and fill that position, and I'm surprised that we haven't discussed it before today to replace a very key person.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Melke, I disagree that there is little difference. To me, in my mind, there's an enormous difference.
I'm talking about pay scale.
I'm talking about pay scale and other things.
No, I looked at both job descriptions. There's very little difference in them, mm-hmm. and the pay is, the top end is quite a bit different, and they overlap by 3/4. So
let me add some background to this. It may sound like we've all of a sudden brainstormed behind the scenes to come up with some secret plan. There's nothing, no conversation at this table that would indicate that. But what we do have is that some history here, that we had a previous person leave several years ago, and Tom and I went through this process before, and we had lots of conversation, and we talked about the qualifications and the job description and all of that before, and defined that, and ended up with what was a very workable and a very successful outcome. That's the background that we're drawing from. So it's for Tom and I, because we've been through it, we've been there, done that, but we want to be able to make sure we're considerate so that you can have time to get up to speed as well. And I respect that.
Your criteria and my criteria might be entirely different. So it doesn't matter how you two agreed on what was needed. There could be other ideas.
Absolutely. And so that's why we bring it here. Talk about it. We have all three of us here be able to consider this, and we're welcome to do that. And we just simply bring some of that background, but I don't think we're somehow saying, well, that's the way it is. It was all pre-decided. No, that's what we inherit. And at this point, now that there's a new member at the table here, we need to make sure that you're on board and that we somehow can get all on the same wavelength to be able to end up possibly with something even better. We're open to that. Is that okay?
I'm the new member.
Yes, ma'am. Aren't you? I mean, compared to
my experience, to yours and Tom's, I'm not the new member.
I'm talking about the new member on this board. We have much more experience as a city council member.
You threw the monkey wrench.
Any other office before that. So, granted, you've got a lot more background in these things than I do. So, I respect that. So,
can we come back to the issue?
Yeah, okay.
So, I'm recommending that we do as soon as possible, mm-hmm. that we fill that position. Because we're in need of them.
Okay.
And we could start them by their qualifications. I just didn't think that we need a senior analyst, that a research analyst would do it. And we could also, like he says, well, we already have a position there. We create positions here too. We've done that. But I'd like to fill the position that we have. So today it's a senior analyst, and we need to advertise for that and get interviewing for that position.
Why don't we? Here's a suggestion.
I want to talk.
Okay.
First of all, it sounds to me like there's a question about if we initiate the direction on this on our own, if we have the authority to do that. Second of all, really, I think you sound like you're pushing to start some action on this.
I am.
See, I'm not mistaken.
I don't want you to misunderstand it.
No, there was no misunderstanding.
Okay.
Mr. McCauley is saying he believes it's his decision what he posts and when he posts it. And I've heard him say he wants to work with us. But what I hear is trying to push him to do something that it sounds like you want to do.
I think this board needs to recognize that we're shorthanded.
We
are
shorthanded.
And we need to give direction to our manager to fill the position. I don't know why he hasn't filled it yet.
Well, it's how long has it been vacant? It's a critically important position.
He probably should have filled it before Axel left.
How long has Axel been gone?
Oh, gosh, what, three weeks?
Two.
2 weeks.
Okay, see, it seems like longer.
Seems like three.
Well, and with his exit, I think it's a critically important position that needs to be very carefully filled. And I see that a policy analyst is not the same as a senior policy, whatever it was. Because I might look, if I'm able to influence you, for two different kinds of, I might look for different qualifications in one than the other. And I don't think they're always interchangeable. So that's the stuff that I would want to be able to talk to you about.
So the natural path forward is for us to be able to, it sounds like, Mark, you're suggesting this as well, that we have conversations one-on-one, and we would bring forward the job description that would be the default, which was Axel's position, and the job description that we previously adopted Peter's position, and we would have conversations on that, and we'd bring that back and see if we all get on the same wavelength. Does that sound like a good plan?
Why would we not wait until the election is over, and we would be able, because it won't be the policy analyst for us three. It'll be the policy analyst for a broader group. And if we could just wait until the new folks are on board, whoever they are, and have a collective notion of what we would look for in that person. And we have some experience in having worked with Axel as whatever he was called, and we can share with the people coming on board how important this position is and what kind of characteristics we have found valuable, and we can communicate that to you. Who knows if it wouldn't be revised? I mean, I don't know. With five people, it changes the dynamics of everything up here. I don't mean philosophically necessarily. I'm talking how we share everything that we currently share up here with only three. Sharing with five, we're going to have other demands on staff. We haven't even talked about that yet. So, and then how does a policy analyst fit in to other work that our staff does for us? And I rely on office staff for all kinds of things, for helping me schedule, for helping keep a calendar, for helping, it's endless the things that I need help with. And I'm already worried about when we have two more people come on board, we're spreading our resources real thin. So that, I don't know if that's going to be the only position that we're going to be coming to you saying, you know what, if you see staff is spread too thin, the other staff, how are we going to do something that relieves that safety valve?
We already have job descriptions for both these positions. That's what we go out and advertise for, and those people with those qualifications apply for the job. Then it's whittled down to the last dozen or half a dozen before we even get involved, if we get involved. But to delay doing this, because the hiring process is a long process itself. If you want to wait until you add two more people here, then you're going to be short. We're short today with only one. We have one analyst for three of us, and I think he probably does work for Mark as well. Mm-hmm. So
Why don't we do this? Why don't we... There's one of the smartest things we can do is just simply have a one-on-one conversations with the county manager.
I don't care one-on-one. Do it or don't.
Well, we've got multiple choices to work out, in other words, which position. And we got timing, and then we could bring that back next week. And that would give us all opportunity to have as much conversations and consider both of those potential job descriptions and timing, and bring this back next week. Is that okay? Okay.
That's fine with me.
All right. Is that fine with you?
No, not with me.
Okay. Trying to move
okay.
forward here as a team.
Let's move on.
Okay. Well, I'm assuming that in any case, we're all interested in the topic, and of course, the natural response
should have been interested in the topic.
Well, I'm very interested.
5 weeks ago, before Axel left,
should
have been.
I understand. It is a timing thing because we all rely upon insurance.
Okay.
Customers call us. Customers are citizens, and they want help now. And we only got so much bandwidth, Peter, that we're all sharing so far.
Okay.
And we're already shorthanded. So. If we're interested in this, let's have conversations one-on-one. Let's do some research, and we'll bring it back next week.
Whatever you want, just get them.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the only way I know to make progress on it. If we don't talk, it doesn't happen.
Would it be feasible to have? We've had a conversation here today, Mr. Horn, about what the charter does. And let me be clear, I was never a charter fan, so I have no defense of the charter. Just, that's my statement for the day. But we have the charter. So can you give us, like, a legal opinion on this specific job classification? Or I don't know exactly how to do this. What I don't want is to keep having this confusion or need to constantly clarify where the absolute boundary is for the county manager or acting county manager, what the absolute boundary is for staff decisions, technically. And then that, of course, can never be substituted for good sense and cooperation, and we already know that.
Yeah.
But what are the absolute legal boundaries? And if we could have that, I think it could be clear in the counselors' minds how much we can... Well, first of all, how we give the county manager the autonomy that the charter requires in hiring matters.
You could probably answer that.
Not on your life.
So that we sort of have a baseline that we operate from.
I'm sorry, I'm listening.
So that we have a baseline.
Right.
And we know what are the established boundaries. That tells us where we have flexibility and influence,
Mark,
you know, other than direct legal authority.
I mean, Chris will never come back.
Did I make it too hard, Chris?
No. Counselor Madure's point's well taken. It's just a matter of which priority you want first. But yes, I will do that, and I will make this a priority.
Great. And I assume that if we part of this communication,
we're gonna have one-on-one for that.
One-on-one, we can talk with Chris. We can talk with you. We can talk with Mark. We can make sure that we nail down whatever our questions are, and all that can happen. We'll bring that back next week with all that insight. It'll be smarter then. Hopefully, we'll be able to unite and see a path forward that's workable for everybody. Okay, moving on to 2.3, animal control. That's you, Tim.
All right, Marty, we're up.
Okay, I think at the last board time, it was agreed that the prosecuting attorney's office would prepare some materials, review the RFP against requirements, legal requirements.
Yes.
And I think Bill's ready to report out on his findings.
So I reviewed the RFP for possible animal shelters, additional animal shelters in Clark County. I was told to review them for what was required under a minimum legal standard. So I reviewed federal law, including the United States Code and the Code of Federal Regulations. I reviewed the county code, and I also reviewed Washington state law. And I compared the same to the RFP. I believe one of the concerns addressed by you, Councilor Mielke, was if there were any provisions within the RFP that were above and beyond the minimum required under whatever laws we're subject to. A significant portion of the material covering on-site veterinarians was above and beyond what would be required under federal law or state law. And specifically, there's really no state law either in the Revised Code of Washington or the Washington Administrative Code that covers the minimum required standards for shelters, animal shelters. County Code 811 addresses some of the issues that come into play in determining what minimum standards are for animal shelters for indoor and outdoor facilities, and it also has a provision for nuisances and animal cruelty, and the reason I bring those up is because those specific provisions address the provision of care for animals that are held within a confined facility. Those are really the only code provisions in the county code that speak to or at least tangentially talk about what the minimum standards for shelters are. So to answer what I believe to be the point of your question, I don't believe that there's a law that actually requires as a minimum standard that a veterinarian be on site at a healthcare facility or an animal shelter. But in looking through the request for a proposal or the RFP, I also noticed that there was reference to a standards of conduct or a standards of practice from the veterinarian association that handles sheltered animals. And there was a document put out by that association back in 2010, which I believe a significant portion of the requirements in the RFP came from. They also tend to share a lot of the spirit under federal code that dictate the space requirements for animals, how to handle quarantine animals, how to handle diseased animals, what the minimum standard of care to maintain the animal's health and wellness is. But that's a prescriptive document. It's not actually law. So when it comes to the actual veterinarian portion of the RFP, there is no minimum standard upon which we need to base those requirements. Now, I wasn't absolutely certain of what your questions were beyond that. So if you have other questions, I can probably address those, but I'd sort of need to know what needed beyond that.
Yeah, my concern was, and the intent was, 2 years ago, we had to accept a contract because we had our backs against the wall, and by state standard, we had to have a shelter for animal control. And so we were supposed to put together a new bid before the time ran out and come back and open it up to where we weren't confined to just one caretaker. We have at least a half a dozen that I know of animal shelters, very well qualified, where people take their pets when they go on vacation and in some cases when they go to work. And we want to open that up on a bid process so that we can get a better deal and not be confined to one person, one price.
The only clarification I guess I'd add to Bill's comments is while there's not an obligation to have a vet on site, there is an obligation to provide for veterinary care to the extent it's needed.
Sure.
So if they don't have one on site, there has to be an obligation on behalf of whoever shelters these animals to take them to a vet in the event they're injured, sick, in need of some care.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the reason it may well have been included in this case was because that was a practical approach, but in fairness to the request of the board, you can just pass that obligation on to the, if you want to go out to a new RFP or some other process to open this contract up for additional providers, you can just pass that obligation on to that entity to be responsible for seeking veterinary care to the extent it's warranted in any particular case. And then the federal standards for the minimum cage sizes or shelter space sizes
right.
will all just come from the federal standards.
Mm-hmm.
I think the concern of staff at one point, and the board, I think, clarified this, but I only bring it up just to avoid this issue, is the board doesn't want to have 20 of these. We're talking about using the Humane Society where it makes sense, where they're geographically located, and then in areas of the county where it's closer to another facility, we would open it up and to the extent they qualify, make it available so for the customers they won't have to drive as far, for the animal control people they won't have to drive as far, and then the facilities will also get some opportunities for business. Is that a fair statement of what your goal is?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we can put this back out to provide this. I've reviewed the animal or the Humane Society's contract with the county for the preceding 2 years. It is not an exclusive contract, so you're not obligated to do all your business with them. You can have other providers, much as you use other providers when you buy gravel or you do other obtain other services mm-hmm. or materials from people, and this would be much in that same vein.
Right, but I was concerned the way the contract was written, nobody else qualified.
Well, we would tailor the contract in this second round because presumably anybody who bids in the second round would also not be offer or charging as much because they're not going to be providing the same level of facilities.
Right.
So mm-hmm. you're going to expect them to... the contract will be different, the RFP will be different, and the amount you pay presumably better be different because the level of care, well, I won't say anything about the level of care because that may be the same, but the kinds of requirements will be different.
Right, and that's one of the things that the Humane Society charges a fair price for what they do. We just disagree that they do what they do, you know. We always say that we're looking for a Motel 6, not a Hilton hotel.
Sure.
So,
to some extent, I mean, the only thing I would say about that mm-hmm. is, to some extent, people's view of animals has changed over the last 10 to 20 years, and you find that how people treat their animals is different in their expectations. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thought, I can tell you as a matter of example that the Superior Court got more calls when they were going to put down a dangerous dog potentially than they did for the murder or the potential of capital punishment against, well, actually it was the crime committed by a person in murdering 4 young children. How you could equate those two is anybody's guess, but
no,
in fact there were more calls to the Superior mm-hmm. Court about one than the other, and so...
Yeah.
Clearly, it's true that people's view about pets is strong.
Right. No, I visited many of these kennels, and they're of quality of such that people choose to take their pets there for care.
Mm-hmm.
So they are all upstanding, just that we need the flexibility because of the rising cost. In fact, I saw in the budget the additional costs was another $125,000 above of what we already pay, which is nearly $1 million.
Well, and I think one other consideration that I think you should probably take is the idea that Clark County is, it's not a small county. There's a significant abandoned and or stray animal issue. And the RFP specifically addresses a very high volume turnover that will need to be met by either the entity or the entities that are selected. And the reason I say that you may want to take that into consideration is you have a fairly large entity right now that's handling the operation, which is the Humane Society. If they choose, despite the fact that the contract is not an exclusive contract, if they choose not to entertain the contract because it's not exclusive to them, then the question is, will the county be able to entertain enough individual entities that they can actually handle the volume, the sheer volume of the animals that have to be addressed on a fairly annual basis? So I point that out because it was a concern expressed by some of the animal control officers. And another additional concern that was addressed was the administrative cost of tracking where specific animals are and auditing various shelters when you have 10 to 15 shelters out there versus one to determine whether or not they are in compliance with the laws that require that the shelters have to operate under and in compliance with the actual contract that's signed off on. So it's just a consideration. Are you going to save money in going to multiple entities from one entity, or is the administrative cost of doing that going to be great? I want to throw that consideration out there because that concern was expressed, and I think it's one that could easily be missed in looking at the rates charged for Hilton type.
And those are some of the things under a new plan that we've addressed. All the ones that I visited were at least the size, if not larger, than the Humane Society. I was surprised myself.
Okay. If I can, you want to say something?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. So, all animals are not suitable for all shelters. So, if we have cattle, if we have horses, if we have llamas, if we get other bigger size animals that are identified as neglected or whatever, right now the Humane Society has a list of people who are qualified to board and order veterinary service and so on and so forth. So some of the smaller operations aren't necessarily going to be able to get a part of that oversight. So if we're talking about smaller operations, we would have to inspect them. Who does the inspection for the facilities?
Generally, animal control officers would ensure that it's in compliance with what we're requiring under, at least that's what
facility
I understand.
I understand
so
that we're the ones that license them.
I'm thinking about things like if I board dogs that are healthy and are from paying clients, and I know that the owner of the boarding facility brings in street strays that have parasites, that can have disease, that can have infection. It's not that I don't think those animals should be cared for, but I don't want them with my pet because then I can be taking home problems. So there needs to be, and I think the code requires quarantine, certain space, certain conditions, identification of disease.
And I think the request for proposal, the original one and possibly the newly drafted one, has a specific provisions in it that require the ability to segregate animals that have
That would be part of the inspection to make sure that they would have holding facilities and all that. So what is the break point financially on whether how many individual ones we could have where we have to provide all these services, which are inspections and review and...
So let me kind of jump in here and...
And the other thing is, if you would cover the issue, if you're in downtown Vancouver, the Humane Society, where it is now, just about could not be further away. So are we talking about locating something closer into Vancouver? How would all this work?
So I'll try to be somewhat responsive to all this, not being so close to it as Paul Scarpelli. The RFP was sent to all of the animal shelters and veterinarians that we knew of for response. This was going to be a three-year term, and the place of performance would be in a county facility, a proposer's facility, a third-party location, or any combination thereof, speaking to a band of shelters or veterinarians in North County or East County who would want to pool and provide the shelter service. The Humane Society currently is in East County. The concentration of our pet population is in South County. It's easily accessible in terms of 14 to 192nd or 4th plane to 162nd to 18th. It's not centrally located, but it is in South County. We haven't done any analysis on if there are three other facilities, what would be the administrative operational costs of staff to attend to those other three or four facilities. By way of the discussion that Councilor Mielke raised, the budget impact, at least for next year, on the rate at $215 an animal is an additional $40,000 to the budget for 2016. Then in 17 and 18, it jumps, I think, $10 a year. So there is a decision package in with the budget readopt that outlines those costs. Again, if we looked at a couple different facilities other than the Humane Society, and I would say it would be like an RFP light. Is that fair to say if we did a second RFP?
Well, absolutely. That yeah, something that's we not directed for the Humane Society. Yeah.
We would have to see what those numbers are, and then again, what's the operational costs, the administrative costs. We don't know this until we saw the numbers.
Can I say something here?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, the ends of the spectrum. On one end, we got one provider, one location, one price. They got a hand, and we write it so that you got to handle all livestock, all horses, all snakes, all birds, all feral cats, everything. You got to have a full-time veterinarian on site all times. And in other words, we can build the list. I'm not saying that's exactly what had happened, but if we end up going down that road with that kind of one size fits all that you have to do, be all to everybody, the virtual effect of that is to eliminate everybody else. When the Humane Society does a great job in many areas, but there are others that specialize, and they may have other locations. So one end of the spectrum is one size, and you know, it's basically virtually exclusive, you know, with a lot of requirements. And the other is they got dozens and dozens, like the logistics. How in the world do you keep track of it? You end up with impractical logistics. Somewhere in between there, especially toward the side of maybe you have two or three, depending on that specialize, maybe somebody just specializes in cattle, or somebody else specializes in horses, or somebody else specializes in birds, that allow them to be able to do what they do best, in addition to what it does. Chris, I think if I heard you correctly, the contract's already non-exclusive. So I assume that there's a willing cooperativeness for others to do better what they do better, naturally anyway, and just don't close that door. So I think that's everybody wins when you allow more than one provider to do what they do best, especially when it comes to particular categories of critters.
For clarity's sake, though, we don't look at large animals, cows, mm-hmm. livestock. We're not sheltering livestock. Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't
well,
think so. But
we do through contract with volunteer groups,
right.
And
yes.
we fund
correct.
Them
we
to feed them. Yes,
they facilitate them.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. And it could be that, you know, and I can imagine that somebody brings a a bird or a snake or a rabbit and say, well, you want to know what a $215 rabbit looks like?
Well,
take a look at that one right there.
That was amended, sir, from
yeah.
contract 2 years
they,
ago.
They so lowered it?
Those smaller animals.
What is
not,
the price for
I
those?
I think it's $70 instead
75?
Of $215.
Yeah.
It's much less.
Yeah. Because when I tour the Humane Society, they mainly specialize in dogs and cats.
And cats, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the 75. Predominant animal count that runs through.
Yeah, which is the bulk
the
of
the animal control staff in the shelter.
Yeah.
And then there was the price break on small
yeah. And any,
animals.
I know in businesses... They normally do best when they do when they focus on the 70 or 80%, and if they try to if somebody expects them to do 100%, then you got all these extra levels of complexity and exceptions that make things really not welcomed. So at least if you open up the doors for those exceptions to see if it makes sense, then it could be that even the Humane Society could welcome that. And our animal control staff would welcome that, and that particular caregiver who specializes in that area would be much more satisfied. People, when I researched this several years ago, I discovered that there are people that feel passionately about feral cats, for instance. And you let them do that. Although if you take that feral cat to the Humane Society, pretty much that critter's gonna die. They're not going to, but these other ones specialize in finding homes for them. So it allows the not only the customers, the service provider, but the critters to potentially be better. Everybody wins if you just simply make it so that you leave the door open for those particular categories and don't let it get out of hand to too many.
So the Humane Society, the East Side.
Yes.
Humane Society. The land is owned by the Humane Society, deeded to it by the City of Vancouver, and I think there's an additional 5 acres next to it. And the building is owned by the Humane Society and was built through private donations and or loans, and I believe the loans have been...
It's free and clear, I believe.
It's free and clear now. I believe the debt was paid off by major contributors. So if we move private donations, so if we, there's a certain logic to having animals be able to be distributed geographically, which could save the animal owners some difficulty. The problem is we've never done this before. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So then we need to find a way, if we're going to do it, to do an RFP that makes sure that those people that are applying that we want to engage in a contract with are sustainable. Because it won't do us any good to get 5 people online and after 6 months they come back to us and say, you know what, this is really a nuisance. I can't get anything else done and I don't want to do this anymore. Or at the end of the year, don't bring any more animals here. Because this is going to be labor intensive. It is for the Humane Society. It will be for anybody else who has a farm or has animals or veterinarians who have ongoing businesses. This will be like an added workload for them. So is there any way in an RFP we can kind of
performance standards?
I mean, we can't make them promise they'll be in business forever and we don't want that, but is there any way to kind of look for stability?
Sure, you can set, and there's a number of things you can look at. The number of years they've been in business, you can set certain number of years. You can require bonds to assure that the availability of service through a course of a year. There's a number of things to get you where you want to be, I think. And we could accept, we frequently will accept in contracts various guarantees. It may, in one case, take the form of a bond. In another case, there may be other assurances we can get that make the county secure that don't have the same cost involved. So there are some ways in which, if the board's concern is assuring that these people are there 6 months from now or 3 months from now,
if
that
we go to all this
sure,
trouble.
Sure, sure. If this is ultimately the choice of the board, then I think we can help you get there.
And so where's the liability if somebody's purebred show animal gets lost or dead? Who has the liability for that? Does it matter where it happens in the chain?
Are you talking about an animal that's in the shelter?
Well, maybe they're on the way. Maybe they escape a truck and get run over. I mean,
well,
because we're going to have people doing this that it hasn't in the past been a routine part of their business.
I would tell you that the claims can come in a couple of different ways. If the animals are out on the loose, it could be the property owner or the owner of the pet. It could be, depending on the facts, it could be the person who harms the animal. Typically it would be the homeowner, or it would be the owner of the pet, but there are some circumstances where that might change. The claim against the animal control people if something happens during transport, but there are circumstances that the law has provided where we are obligated to provide this service, that unless there's some exception, that generally we're not responsible. And then once they reach the facility, all of our contracts have indemnification and hold harmless language that we would require. So it would be the facility, whomever that would be.
Okay.
I don't want to make this too more complicated or painful or, you know, just simply anything more than that. I just simply want to support anybody who brings forward an idea that could potentially be innovative and smarter potentially and work simpler and better, and I support Tom's freedom to do that. He doesn't need my help to do this. He just simply has my support. I trust that staff and that you'll find a way to see if there be opportunities there and find what can work. And so with that, I say have at it. Give it an opportunity, and I don't think that I don't need to go any further in this conversation with this to somehow put boundaries or limitations on that. That'll happen automatically as soon as staff and Chris is involved. I'm sure it'll pass all the muster that it needs to pass. But I just want to just lend my support to any counselor, in this case it's Tom, to take an innovative idea and give it legs, see if you can make it fly. Is that okay?
Very good.
All right.
Can I hope Marty, you feel the same way about my 2% proposal.
Just one closing thought is the contract we have with the Humane Society will expire at the end of this year.
Yeah.
To not have a contract into 2016 would be disastrous. We should have at least something in place as we work on an RFP light to get other proposers into next year. So we need to bring something to the board at least for 2016.
I don't think Tom's vetoing a contract. He's just
asking for other options.
Yeah, it's just this a matter of other options. Yeah. Work
right.
With them.
I hear you.
That's what I had said at the beginning. Yeah. That this is a supplement, not a substitute, or not a replacement.
Yeah, it's capacity. Not. Yeah, right. It's not trading one for the other.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, talking about work with the board.
Okay. No.
Explore options.
Explore options. Keep it simple. Is that okay?
Well, I don't want another year contract with Humane Society unless it's balanced. As long as they don't have exclusivity, we can still go with the other.
And
okay.
That's what it will be.
Okay.
Okay. Instead of, I see the next item is the Cowlitz resolution, which is going to be involved in an executive session. So I don't want to move. So I think, let me insert this new, the point that I brought up earlier ahead of that, if that's okay. All right. I wanted to make sure when I would look back and considered the idea of paying off debt early, I asked our treasurer's office, I said, hey, I want to make sure I have to go. I understand what we did in the past. And I actually, and so Tom Frui, how do you pronounce his last name from the treasurer's office?
Larry
Frui. Larry Frui, I'm sorry. Yes. Here's a couple more. I asked him to share what happened. And so basically on June 1st of this year, we didn't just pay off $4 million in debt early. We paid off $7,755,000 early. So it was more than I thought. And we were able to do that because our general fund is so healthy that the general fund is becoming the bank. The general fund gets paid interest instead of paying the bank interest. We're paying ourselves interest. So what we have here, what he put this together, this is his numbers. The bottom line is here, that first sentence. It says, we refinanced 2005A, which is a reference to a bond, called the bonds and funded the call from general fund balance to be paid back to the general fund, instead of a bank, by the funds benefiting. There was $7,755,000 of bonds called with a net savings of $543,364. And there were three different, entities that were holding that debt. There are three listed there, and all the savings from each of those is listed. So the idea of, yep, we are all on the same page. We want to pay off debt early. Been there, done that. About 6 to 7 times what was the proposed amount that we would do if we ended up doing it, if we just simply to try to do that with a property tax cut. So, yep. I was pleased to see it was more than $4 million. Yes, sir.
Just point of clarification. The debt still exists. It's just an internal debt rather than a debt to an external entity.
Yes, the point of clarification is that we are the one holding, we're paying ourselves.
Yes.
In other words, we're self-funding on the debt, which is
right.
Good.
But the debt has not
been the debt retired. Is actually held by Conservation Futures, the Fire District, and REIT funds. So, in other words, we are paying, the general fund is loaning the money out from, and we even after it loaned the money out, we're still meeting or exceeding best practices, and these three entities are going to be paying the general fund more than $500,000 in savings. That's so good.
If I might add, we paid off some bonds, and we intentionally didn't pay them all off because our finance people said that we need to keep something out there to keep our credit score on top. We could have paid them all off, and we elected not to on purpose because we have to continue to establish credit.
Yes, and that's good. So my point on this is that it wasn't $4 million. It's almost, it's $7.7-some million. And been there, done that, and it's a citizen's turn to benefit. We paid this off before we ever considered a tax cut. We achieved best practices with our reserve fund balance and established an extra long-term fund balance in addition. And my point is, it's the citizens' turn to have some relief. We've covered the basis for the general fund really well. Yeah, there will always be extra needs. However, we already met these needs of more than they've ever been met in the past, and it's the citizens' turn for us to be able to grant them some tax relief.
So I would like to suggest that to change the debt holder so that we can reduce our savings of 543 is okay, but the principal, the only difference in the principal owed is who holds the debt. The debt is still there. The proposal to set aside 2% of the property tax is to actually pay off the debt. Reserve the 2% as it accrues and actually pay off the debt. And I didn't know this was going to come back today, so I don't have the spreadsheet that I brought before. I didn't bring it to this meeting. So it's two different things. My proposal is to actually pay off debt, not just change who the debt holder is. And it is true that by changing the debt holder, you change the interest cost that's accruing. But I'm talking about actually paying off so that we reduce our long-term debt holding. So that's the difference between what was done before and what my suggestion is. So I just wanted to be clear on that.
I get that. However, we didn't own this debt. They did. And we are healthy enough for us to be able to, for the general fund to be the bank, which pays positive interest rather than just saving interest to the general fund, which is really good.
Point is the debt still exists, and after that it's just semantics.
Well, it's more than semantics. The bank is paying us interest instead of us paying the bank interest.
Well, I think my idea, whether it's accepted or not, is affirmed by the number of emails and communications that I've received from people in the finance world, people that are CPAs, people that are long-time, well-established, highly respected people who own financial firms and people that own CPA firms. So my proposal isn't perfect, but it has some merit. So that's just to defend my work, which I think was good work.
It was good work. Yeah, I appreciate
and
that.
And so there's no support for altering the proposal to go to the 2% set aside? Do I hear somebody making a motion on that?
If we hadn't done so much already along that line, I would support that. But we have already far exceeded what you're suggesting to do. And as far as, we also paid off the lawsuits or made arrangements for payment. We paid off the bonds, and then we absorbed some of our debt ourselves. So we have done all that, and I have to give credit again to our finance people. They're the ones that came up with these ideas, and they were outstanding. So I think for someone to give a real accurate accounting as a CPA, they would have to have the whole picture. And I don't know, the whole picture wasn't known at the time.
They have the whole picture, Mr. Melky. They have the whole picture.
Right. So bottom line,
how do you find this out?
We had some settlements from the 1990s that, $10 million, we ended up having to incur that. And so, yep, good idea. We've already moved in the direction really well, more than I thought. And I just wonder if we don't do this now, when we've exceeded our expectations, and now the general fund is actually becoming the bank to finance and get paid back interest, will we ever get to the point where now it's a citizen's turn? I think we're there, and we've worked really hard to get there, and I just don't want to miss that opportunity. It might not ever happen again if we don't say it's their turn.
Cowlitz.
That's okay, Cowlitz. So with that, is there anything else because the Cowlitz is the, we're going to go into executive session, possibly come back for action regarding that. And before we do that, is there any other topics, business you want to bring up, anyone?
Yeah.
Okay.
For general, I wanted to bring back the unfinished business of a time certain resolution that we talked about on our fee holiday, our transportation impact fee holiday. We talked about it. I brought a rough draft here a week or two ago or three, and it said that to bring it to 300 days, because I didn't have the numbers with me at the time, I'd like to rewrite that resolution to 252 days and either bring it here or get it on the consent calendar.
Okay, I'm open to that. It's just a matter of anytime any of us has a potential improvement idea, I welcome anybody to bring it forward and bring the proposal, and let's take a look at it and see if we can get something good out of it. You can introduce it when you're ready. Oh, yeah, thank you very much, Mark. Sorry, I have it right here looking at me. I have something. Thank you for the reminder. I'm sorry that I didn't proactively think about it. Mark McCauley has worked with our elected officials, the other elected officials, and our department heads in a very broad, collaborative way for a long time. They have put together a mission, values, and strategies, two and a half page document that gives, mission, values, and strategies, just lots of good stuff that defines how we work, who we are, what's our culture like, what's our, all of those things that would keep us on always moving in the right direction to end up doing really good business for the citizens. He's reminded us multiple times, at least he's reminded me multiple times. I've got multiple copies of this that sat on my desk for way too long. I apologize for that. And finally, I took the time to focus on this and went through it, and I thought, man, if I was a teacher, I'd give an A+. This is really good. And I just wanted to give my vote of confidence for the work that's been done and see what can we do to support all of that effort that has brought such good vision for the future. Mark, you want to tell us more about this?
Well, I think you covered it fairly well, Mr. Chair. convened our management team on a number of occasions, and we had a facilitator who walked us through the process very skillfully. And it was a very participative process so that multiple stakeholders were allowed to give input. We broke into small groups. We had butcher paper on the walls. And we would...
Sticky notes?
Big ones. And we would write our notions, what's important to us, what should be important to the citizens of this community. Mm-hmm. And slowly this began to evolve. We surveyed the county workforce on a number of occasions, asking for their input, it slowly matured, and we polished it repeatedly, and I think the final product is one that I'm certainly proud of. Mm-hmm. And I've got all the elected officials. District Court has signed up. Superior Court said, we might be involved in litigation somehow related to this, so we don't want to sign up. Plus, we're an arm of the state. And so
go get your money from them.
Right, and all my directors are on board with this, and I was hoping that the council would join all of those folks in adopting this as their guiding document.
Let me just point out a few of the things that are in this, because some of these things you're thinking, they're no-brainers, of course we would do that, but I think it's really important that they be stated here and they kind of keep us on track so we can not only in just basics and in principles, but also on some of these specifics that, to me, take us beyond that point. For instance...
So, Mr. Chair...
Yes, sir.
That clock up there isn't working.
It stopped.
So you're looking at 4 o'clock. You're not looking...
Oh, is that right?
You're not looking at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
It's 3:34.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, I'll make it very, very brief here. A few of the things that I really like about this, and I think we all got copies of this, I think, for the last month or two.
Yet.
Yeah, I'll go through your office and find them all.
What I liked about this is that there's, for when it comes to making decisions, it's data-driven. It's science-based. It's evidence-based. It's data-researched. It's, in other words, it's truth. I like that. When it comes to customer service, accountable, courteous, timely, predictable, understanding how to meet the customer's needs, and under the finances, it's even taken it even further. Developed a 6-year program for budget, capital, technology, funding, preservation, and maintenance. an asset of assets before investing in new ones. In other words, think ahead, plan ahead, allow departments to create fund balances for future capital replacements instead of all of a sudden it's upon us, you got to buy a $50,000 piece of equipment and you didn't plan for it. Increase efficiency, effectiveness, reduce duplication, reduce errors. Really good. So how do we support you on this, Mark?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion.
Oh, there you go.
There's action.
That we adopt the mission and value strategies.
And I'm glad to second that. As a point of discussion, it's a fine document. Thank you for doing it. Mm-hmm. And I apologize for having seen it at least four times before and not putting it on the hot burner, because it is an important document. And it is reflective of you, your management style, and your leadership style, mm-hmm. which is good for all of us. So thank you for bringing it forward again. And I apologize for my part in the delay.
So if I can restate your motion even better, if it's okay.
No, don't. You dare me. Oh. No.
Okay, then I'll just make a comment.
It's already been seconded.
Okay. It was to adopt? Okay.
Yes.
My commentary on it is that I more than adopt it. I fully embrace it.
More than adopt my motion.
Just commentary. And I am, I could not be more supportive and fully embracing this, and I know that everybody who participated on this needs to know that get a well done, really well done. Any more discussion?
Yes.
Okay.
This document will be inserted where? How it is. Will this be incorporated into another document? Is this standalone? Is this? Do you have a suggestion for that?
Yes, I'm going to have it printed on nice paper. I'm going to request that everybody sign it.
Yes.
And then I want to post it on the website.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I want to print it on larger paper and post it in the hearing room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So for incorporating this into other operational documents, do we have a place we're going to lodge it as part of an accepted approved document? We can think about that,
yes.
And maybe you want to think about that, but should it be part of a broader document where we insert it?
Well, I would say that when the five-member board is formed, that as part of your rules of practice,
mm-hmm.
that you might incorporate it as an appendix or an mm-hmm. attachment to that document or
good.
In some other fashion.
Yep.
Well, I'd want it in a broader sense than just the council rules of practice.
Well, I'm
but
going
to incorporate them there too.
Yes, and we've already started. Even though I didn't have you on board until just now, we've been using this when we bring our new employees in for their orientation. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Part of our work improvement program.
Yeah.
This will be incorporated into the servant leadership aspect.
And for the record, I'm the first one that signed it.
Yeah, right there.
Oh, yeah, I did. Uh-huh.
So,
the resolution?
No, there's a suggestion.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That
would
be nice.
Yes, the resolution's a great idea.
Make us all number one.
Yeah, we could put that up on the wall, but I don't think we have a wall big enough.
Well, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So,
and I'll put it on the agenda for next week. No, or whenever you have to go to WASAC.
Yes, that's a good time.
So, okay, well, Chris, you'll help me with that?
Okay. Yeah.
Well,
okay.
I can't be more grateful.
Oh, well,
thank you.
I think that's mutual.
We're grateful.
Great. Okay.
No.
Is there anything else?
I wasn't done before you jumped in on my time.
I picked up on the cue. I didn't want to miss it.
I have been missing my focus time on CVTV, and I heard that we cut it off because of the election. Do you know anything about that?
During the hearing, the CVTV went offline. I walked down there, and they were having
technical. Well, we do every 3 months. We rotate around, and we have a question and answer thing with a moderator, and we haven't been doing that. And I remember years ago, if we were running for office, we didn't do the focus, but we haven't done it for a long, long time, and I was wondering if
We haven't been in the primary since the first Tuesday in August, and none of us had any focus.
It would be interesting to get back on track.
Can you look into it, Mark?
Yeah.
Get back on track.
It's really informative, and it's good for the public. And we started to take action on our quasi-government building. Did we finalize that?
Quasi-government building?
Yeah, recognizing this building here being the same as our courthouse.
Oh, the limited public use.
Yes.
We're waiting for the Friends of the Carpenters / Share, whatever that was, to finish up their thing first, right?
Yes. And
what's the time frame?
And I'm not current on the schedule as it exists today. I need to get an update from the city manager.
Write that down.
Okay. So, in other words, we were going to make sure their needs were met before, in another alternate way, rather than here before we did
no,
that.
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
Just that we are a government building of business and has never been stipulated as such, and we wanted to stipulate it as such that it's not a parking place for the homeless.
Well,
that we do contribute a great deal of money to share and whatnot. And you notice that our homes don't sit on the steps of our courthouse or on the city hall, and that's the reason why. And I think the same respect needs to be in this building here.
Well, when Andy Silver at Council for the Homeless and Vanessa Gaston with Community Services, I check with both of them, and that's where they would be on board if they knew that need was met, and that way nobody has reservations to it at that point. So we're almost there.
We have staff.
Well, maybe that's overstating it.
I think yes.
Okay. Well, they had less reservations if that need was met,
yeah,
and that's supposed to be somewhere around last part of November or early part of December.
Mid-December, but. My most recent conversation with Andy revealed that he has more concerns about that limited public use resolution than I understood previously.
Okay.
And so I think we need to circle back when we know the opening date of the shelter, just to reevaluate and confirm that that's what we want to do.
Friends of the Carpenter has also opened up a day center.
Well, they haven't yet.
I visited a week or so ago, and so I'm guessing that today it might be done.
It was really a question of timing. So can you let us know what that timing is so that we can end up following through on our part of that?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? Okay.
And is that timing on the resolution?
Yes.
To
follow the day center.
I think it's more important
to
follow up with what you said, Mark, so it's understood. And I think that could be up to legal staff.
We prepared the resolution. It's ready to go. There's
authority
that supports the board's proposed resolution, and we've done that analysis. It's more a judgment for this council about how you want to proceed.
Yeah.
I think you were trying to minimize any potential effect, and that was the whole purpose for the timing issue. It's not to suggest that it's not important, nor is it to say that one is required. It was more just an accommodation or a recognition of the need, and to try and delay it address that as much as possible.
So our staff is the ones that are impacted, that have been requesting the relief and the help and the appropriate measures to take. So I assume that we're all on the same wavelength, that when that day center opens, that which is going to be like really soon here, within the next, if it hasn't already, at least very soon, that you can bring that forward for us to consider. Does that sound?
I don't understand why that's a stipulation at all.
Are we that close on the day center?
The 20th Street, the one on 20th Street?
Yeah.
It's very close, I thought.
Yeah, we're about, last I heard, it was almost there. So
yeah, they were having trouble procuring the shower units.
Yeah.
There were
holdups.
Yes.
I didn't know what specifically they were, but there were complications.
So I'm supportive of moving ahead. I think it would be good if that could be aligned. So if you can let us know when that is, then it would be so much more I think, accepted by more people if we can align those up.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Been politically correct. That sounds really good. I'm not politically correct.
Well, I'm thinking of practical help for the individuals.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
No, that's all I have.
Anything else?
So I just have a question. Where are we on the agenda now?
We are
at the end of it.
Just before executive session for the college resolution.
Okay. And if we could have just a couple minute break, because I want to go find my notes
sure.
on this.
Sure. So you want 5 minutes? Is that fine?
Sure.
Okay.
And
so is there only one topic? Is it the college resolution?
There is the topic related to the
The
college resolution, and then there are two items related to potential litigate or pending litigation.
Yeah,
and just to bring the board up to date on
yep,
that.
Okay, and related to that, too, the 179 or the whatever that, what is that?
319
Street interchange with I-5 related. So anything related to that?
That's all part of this pending or this college resolution that. Counselor Stewart wanted to discuss.
Okay, and there's something.
And then we have litigation.
Okay.
Collective bargaining.
Okay.
So that too. Yeah, and that won't take long.
Okay. All right. If there's nothing else, we'll take a 5 minute break, and then we'll and that will be considered a recess. We'll jump into executive session for those topics for how long?
Well, I thought an hour and a half, but...
That's too long.
The board can shorten its deliberations and discussions at will, so you want to be done at 5, right?
No, I'm going to be done at 4:30 at the latest.
Okay, so 45 minutes then, okay. But we'll have to be disciplined.
Okay, all right.
Is that possible?
Yeah, okay. Hearing no objection, we're going to recess, and we'll come back out with potential action. These are related topics.
We have to go back into open public.
Yeah, that's what he meant.
Close
anyway,
it could involve some action related to these topics. Okay, thank you very much. We are in recess.